Someone You Should Know. A program about people you know, and even more that you don't. Hosted by Stuart Sachs, veteran, husband, father, and grandfather. Now, here's your host, Stuart Sachs.
Well, hello again. Welcome to another episode of Someone You Should Know. Glad to have you with us. We're going to have a great time today because we're going to give you some information and tell you about something that you probably were not as aware of as you should be. We are brought to you today by our good friends over at No Sweat Experts. You know, we are at that point in the season where it's starting to get very hot out. The last thing that you need is to be without your air conditioning. So play ahead of the game and I'll give the folks over at No Sweat Experts a call. Have them come out, check out your system, make sure you're wet, all set for the heat and humidity and all that's coming. And we're in the north part of Texas and all, and you know that it's going to get hot. You don't want to be sweating to death. Call No Sweat Experts. Good guys. They take good care of me. Also, a big shout out to Christine Dean, who is the program director for our show and also a sponsor of this show, too. She does a great job, and we'll tell you more about her in upcoming shows, too. Well, I want to welcome a very special guest today, Peter Young. He is coming to us all the way from Montana. Welcome, Peter.
Stuart, thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
It is an honor to have you because for a young guy like yourself, you have experienced more than most people experience in an entire lifetime. And there are two very key areas, folks, that we're going to be talking about today. And one is Peter's absolute fascination with sports. But also, Peter spent some time in a cult. And for those of you who may not be totally familiar with what a cult is, there are a variety of different kinds of cults. And sometimes you may be in a cult and don't even realize how you're being manipulated. And that's one of the areas we're going to talk with. So I guess let's start at that point, Peter. Tell us how you got into this cult and did you know you were going into a cult on the entry, or you were manipulated? You didn't really realize what was going on until you were there. I mean, how does one know what a cult is and whether you are in fact in one or not?
Well, great question. And the short answer to how I got involved was I married into it. So I married the love of my life, Paige. I met her when I was doing the 6 and 10 sports at the ABC affiliate in Pocatello, Idaho. This is mid to late 90s. And I knew that she had a friend of mine had described him as the weird family guru, the Clausen guru, Uncle Robert. And shortly after meeting Paige, I heard all about Uncle Robert and, thought he was kind of odd and weird, but sort of harmless. And I, clearly was blinded by love at the time. I was in my late 20s and was in love with Paige. So we married, and over the years, I was the proverbial frog in the boiling pot of water. So to answer the last question, Stuart, I always say you don't know you're in a cult. You only know you were in one. And that was exactly true for me, because cults do look all different. They come in all shapes and sizes, right? Small, big. They can do really odd things. But at the foundation, it's about mind control. So if your mind is under control, you don't know you're a cult. And so for me, it wasn't until I got out and was really the Lord opened my eyes and ears to the fact that, yep, I was in a cult.
You mentioned the mind control, and we all think of ourselves as fairly intelligent human beings. And you wonder, where was it along the line that I didn't see the red light go on, or I didn't notice the signs? I mean, were there any signs along the time that you were part of this cult that you questioned, what am I doing here and why?
Well, there was a lot of signs. I was probably, so I was, married to Paige for over 20 years, but, she left me at about the 20-year mark of our marriage. So, it was a good 16, 17 years in before I truly became brainwashed. And I would say I was brainwashed for probably 2-3 years. But prior to that, I really had a lot of doubts. I mean, there's all kinds of anecdotal stories I can give you about Uncle Robert. By the way, it wasn't related to any of us. You know, I'm 6'5", typical Northern European looks. Paige, same thing, blonde hair, blue eyes, tall, same with her family. Uncle Robert, born and raised in Syria, short guy, bald, jet black hair, olive complexion. But he was always around. And to him, I mean, I'll just throw out some ideas. You know, everything was a Jewish conspiracy. It was a Jewish conspiracy to take over the world and control Christians. He considered casinos the true churches in America. And he didn't really have a full-time job. So he also considered churches his office. So he would call them his office. And then in typical cult-like fashion, you know, like a Stuart, if you were to go Google what's a cult, indicators or signs of a cult, you'll get a million hits on Google. But they'll all have some similarities, which are there's a leader, and this person is very charismatic, narcissistic, has a grandiose sense of self, makes all the rules, but none apply to him, and will often act as a gatekeeper to God. And Uncle Robert checked all those boxes. And so early on, I saw all this, but I went along to get along with my wife.
You know, we had a pre-discussion before we scheduled our program, and I told you I'm a product of the 60s, and I remember during the Vietnam War era and all very often those that were conscientious objectors and all became prey for cult leaders because, you know, you don't have to serve in the army. You can join our group. They didn't say join our cult, but join our commune, if you will. We'll take care of you. You'll have a wonderful life in peace and prosperity and anti-military. And a lot of young people came out of college with this mixed, you know, emotions as to what they're going to do with their lives. And a lot of them were brought into what was not deemed a cult, but it was a cult. One we talked briefly about was Sun Yun Moon, a huge cult of Moonies that followed him. And he was the light. He was the way. And it was almost like a pyramid scheme too. Go out and find your friends and bring them in. And you said yours was a very, very small cult, but did it really seem to you after the fact that it operated basically on the same premise?
A lot of the same premises, yes. You know, ours was tiny. So at its very most, let's say its apex, you know, it maybe had 12 adults and then our children. So I have 5 children with Paige. And then, you know, there were a few other kids and some other adults. But again, it was very small. And we weren't out trying to gather the Smiths, the Jones, the Andersons, whomever, the Sachs family or anything like that. We were very exclusive. So while, yes, some cults do try and recruit people, right? So it's they will recruit people because it's some kind of business empowerment or enlightenment or self-improvement, anything but a cult, right? No one ever joins a cult. We were the exact opposite. We were very exclusive. So, you know, once you join the cult, well, then the cult controls you through secrecy and paranoia. And that's another classic sign of cults. So you know, the paranoia is, you know, well, Uncle Robert was smart enough to realize through his knowledge of the Bible and world history that, you know, everything goes back to Jacob and Esau in the Bible, if you know your Bible, and from Genesis. And so Esau becomes Edom, which becomes modern Jewry, and then Judah becomes Christians. And so the Jews are, of course, onto him. So we have to be very careful, you know, don't say certain words on the cell phone. Get rid of your trash, you know, either burn it or shred it, right? So no one can read it. So therefore, since we knew all this, because Uncle Robert was so brilliant, his life was in danger. So then, of course, we had to protect him. So we would circle the wagons. So therefore, you know, the paranoia and the secrecy and exclusivity. You know, we were better than you, Stuart, or other people, because we knew the true gospel, which, of course, only Uncle Robert knew and with us taught us. So it was different in that regard that we were tiny, not a big cult that a lot of people knew, because that's the way Uncle Robert wanted it.
It is interesting, and at that time, also you were, you know, I mean, you were not in this cult, working in the cult, and preaching in the cult, and being part of that cult. You had a life outside of your life. Your first job. Well, let's go back even further, because I remember you said to me that when you were growing up, you wanted to be the next Larry Bird. And I mean, I'm very familiar with Larry Bird because he was from Indiana, and I'm originally from Indiana.
Yeah, so. I played basketball in New Jersey, high school basketball, and then went to George Washington University. I was a huge Larry Bird Celtics fan. And the funny thing is, the irony is, Stuart, you know, I was not that good, right? I was nowhere near good enough to play in the NBA. Good enough to play D1 and have a few good games. But Red Auerbach, the general manager, longtime Hall of Famer coach for the Celtics, he actually played basketball at George Washington University, like way back in the 30s and 40s. But always had a home in the D.C. area, even while he was coaching and then the GM for the Celtics. So he would come to a practice or a game or two every year because GW is right in downtown D.C. So I got to meet him. So I got to tell you this great story, real quick story. I'm a freshman at GW, and again, I'm still a Larry Bird fan. One day I'm going to go play alongside him for the Celtics. And I go to the gym for practice, and there's my head coach and Red Auerbach. And they had just got done playing racquetball because Red was always around. And I go down the steps towards the locker room. There he is. And I'm like, dumbstruck. It's Red Auerbach. And my coach says, Peter, this is Red Auerbach. Red, this is Peter Young, one of our freshmen. And Red had already seen a few practices. And he doesn't say, hi, how are you? Nice to meet you. He said he had an unlit cigar and he's holding on to it. And he says, Young, you can shoot, but you can't do nothing else. And that's the only time I ever talked to him. He never said another word to me. And unfortunately, he was right.
So was it kind of at that point in George Washington that you kind of realized that maybe your dreams of playing in the NBA were going to be, you know, was not going to be exactly your forte? But did you know, you knew enough about the game that you wanted to stay in it in some way, shape, or form?
Yeah, you know, you would think the writing was on the wall and I should have seen it a lot earlier, but, you know, dreams die hard. So I got done with my fifth year at GW. My last year I played for Mike Jarvis and we were good. We almost made the NCAA tournament. And then I got into coaching and I was going to be the next John Wooden. So, you know, and I give people the Reader's Digest version of my life. That's true. That's really what I thought because, you know, I was so immature. It was all about me and my ego. And so when I got into coaching, I moved out to Colorado, coached for 2 years. I was very immature because, again, it was about me and not about the kids. And I loved the game. I loved being around the game of basketball. But it was I did not have the maturity at the time to be a good coach. And that's when I got into broadcasting.
And it was in basketball broadcasting, too, that you got into.
Well, I did a little bit of everything. So my first full-time job would have been at the ABC affiliate in Southeast Idaho, where, you know, you're doing the 6 and 10 sportscast. Of course, basketball was part of that. And then my big break came 2 years later when I got hired by OLN, which is the Outdoor Life Network. So I thought, here we go. I'm going to be the next Bob Costas.
So let's see, I'm not going to be Larry Bird and chances are I'm not going to be the next John Wooden. So I'll set my son.
And I had some good years in the broadcasting industry. I had a lot of fun, made a lot of great friends. There'll never be another Bob Costas. And you know, my career did kind of get cut short when the president and CEO of OLN, the Outdoor Life Network, didn't like the sound of my voice. So my career kind of took a nosedive.
I mean, what kind of a voice was he looking for?
I don't know, but not mine. I wish I knew.
So was that kind of, you know, and you have also been a writer and a storyteller, and also was that kind of the impetus that led you to say, well, let's see, I'm not going to play basketball and I'm not going to coach basketball and I'm having a little trouble broadcasting it. So why don't I just write a book about it?
You know, the book, The Blue Team, so that's my first book. It's a novel about faith in basketball. Started my last year at GW. I was going to write the book of the anonymous Division I basketball player, the guy getting dunked on, not the guy doing the dunking, which was me.
Okay.
But then I thought, well, other than my old buddies from college who will get a kick out of these anecdotes, who's going to find this book interesting? So I changed it into a novel. And then I talked with an old producer of mine for OLN, Rick LaCivita, brilliant guy, has produced and directed World Series, Olympics, Monday Night Football, you name it. And he said, Peter, every great story, every great novel is about something more than plot and characters. It's about some principle or idea, love, revenge, patriotism, faith, etc. What is your book about? And I didn't know. I didn't have an answer. So the book kind of went back to the drawing board for a few years. And I finally came up with it, which was that we are our own worst enemy. And so I was always trying to be the next Larry Bird or the next Bob Costas or the next John Wooden, rather than not trying to put so much pressure on myself to be the next, you know, great basketball player. As I believe as a Christian, you know, when the Lord saves us, he saves us from ourselves. It doesn't mean you're going to make the game winning shot, but you'll have the peace of mind to know, hey, if I miss it, life's not going to end because basketball is what I do. It's not who I am. So that was kind of the story within the story. And thus, I'm not trying to be the next John Grisham as a writer. I'm just trying to be the best, finally, the best Peter Young.
And that book was released when? You said you started it when you were at GU. When did you finish it and release it?
I started it like 1990, but you know, many years, didn't touch it for a year or two. Released it in 2016.
Oh, so there was a little bit of a time lapse there.
Oh yeah.
And am I right that you are even in the process maybe of coming out with a sequel?
Yeah, so I was working on the sequel to The Blue Team back in, this would be just before COVID, so 2019. And then you know, my attorneys had asked for kind of a timeline of our marriage of, you know, what had happened, what had gone wrong. And that, you know, 5-page note to my attorneys became 10 pages, 20 pages to during COVID. I wrote my memoir, Stop the Tall Man, Save the Tiger. I wrote 4 or 5 hours a day. It just came out of me. And so then the sequel kind of got put to the back burner. But, you know, now that I've released the memoir, yeah, I am working on it. Hope to have it out in 2024.
Well, you just mentioned another book, and the other book is not about basketball. It's more or less about your time in the cult and all. Stop the Tall Man, Save the Tiger. So the first question, having said that, is explain the title.
Sure, I was hoping you'd do that. Okay, so when I first met Paige, this would be 1996, and she had just had a very important dream a month, 2 months before she met me. And she talked about it for years. Okay, so she has this dream and she writes her interpretation of it and sends it off to Uncle Robert. Now remember, Uncle Robert is the guru and the expert on everything. And I haven't met the guy yet. I haven't even met Paige. In the dream, Paige is in a house, she's with a boyfriend, and there's a tiger on the loose. And if the tiger finds her, it's gonna kill her. Paige doesn't wanna kill the tiger, she just wants to know where it is because the tiger represents an honor and respect, thing that she admires. Okay, so the door to the house opens and a tall man walks in. But she can't see the face of the tall man. And Paige hides, the boyfriend hides, and disappears, and she's worried about the tiger because she knows the tall man is there to kill the tiger. So she has this dream, she tells Uncle Robert, and then Uncle Robert writes this 24-page letter in response. Now, again, I told you I'm 6'5". She had the dream before she could meet me. And I didn't realize what this dream meant when I first met her. 20 years later, it seems so obvious to me now. And those of you who are listening are probably like, well, yeah, duh. The reason she couldn't see the face of the tall man is because she hadn't met me yet. And so in the analysis or the interpretation of the dream, Uncle Robert tries to pawn himself off as the tall man, convinces Paige, who had already been baptized, by the way, a couple months prior, that she is the tiger because she doesn't want to really kill the tiger, meaning she's not truly surrendered her life to the Lord. So she's not saved. She's an un-Christian. And he, even though he's 5'6", is the tall man there to save her. So he turned the dream upside down, convinced her she wasn't saved, which then Uncle Robert did that to her father, her mother, and then many years later, me. So he was the gatekeeper to God. 20 years later, it's so obvious, right, that I was the tall man. And again, I don't look much like a knight in shining armor. But clearly to me, the Lord had given her that dream as a warning. Hey, this guy that you adore and revere is not who he says he is, and he's not helping you in life. And of course, you know, again, 20 years later, we had him as our marriage counselor, and he destroyed our marriage, destroyed our family, broke it up. So I miss the real meaning of the dream, unfortunately. And it's fascinating. You can read more about it in the book. But again, I didn't come to this conclusion until, 21, 22 years later, when I found the original copy of the letter he sent her. And my jaw hit the floor when I read it again.
Incredible. AuthorPeterYoung.com. Visit the site because it gives you a lot of insights, not only into the tall man, save the tiger, stop the tall man, save the tiger, but also into The Blue Team, which is the first novel. And you'll learn a little bit more about the meaning of it, of each of those, and also the meaning here. It still is a fascinating subject. And how do you feel after all of these years, reflecting back on that time in a cult, and what has it done to the Peter Young now in 2023?
Well, I am certainly a million times stronger than I was before. You know, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that I was saved as a teenager, although you know, Uncle Robert and Paige convinced me to doubt it and not trust my salvation and my faith. But I rely on my faith more now than ever. I don't look to Paige or anybody else or an Uncle Robert or a guru. You know, is this right? Is that right? I just trust what the Lord has given me, the wisdom that he has given me. So I'm much, much stronger. You know, one thing about being in a cult is that the mind control will make you doubt everything. So, you know, before Paige left me, which is how I, you know, kind of got effectively kicked out of the cult is when she left me, I would doubt every single thought and word that came from my mind or out of my mouth. And I would have to run it by Uncle Robert. Is this okay? Is this right? And what a horrible way to live. So I certainly have more joy now, more confidence, and far more strength. I wish I could have learned these lessons another way, but I'm thankful that I have been rescued from a destructive cult.
Yeah, but it's fair to say that whatever lessons that are learned, as long as they are a learning process, and all whether it you had to go through good or bad in order to learn them, you're still a better person for it. Because do you think that you have the ability now, having been in a cult, to be able to perceive if there is another cult out there or to perceive if somebody is either trying to recruit you or recruit anybody else? You may have that perception of saying you might want to question that.
Well, I tell people I'm not the expert on cults. I'm certainly the expert on my life. I certainly was in a cult. I can't imagine it happening again. The one thing I always tell people is that, listen, it can happen to anybody. And I know a lot of people think, oh, come on, it would never happen to me. Well, that's what I thought. And so the circumstances of getting in and out of a cult are as different as human beings are. To me, Stuart, the number one red flag, because again, cults are often secretive. So unless you're in, you don't really know what they're doing. But if a friend of yours, whether it's your cousin Bob or your old college roommate or somebody in the bowling league on Friday nights, whatever it is, and they all of a sudden cut off all of their traditional relationships to where they're no longer calling you, they don't see you at church, they don't see you at the bowling league, they don't see you out for drinks on Thursday night or whatever it is, and they've kind of cut everybody out of their lives, that is a huge red flag. And those are very uncomfortable conversations to have, to say, Stuart, know what's going on? Like, I never see you anymore. Are you okay? And then that person will talk on and on and on about either this group or this guy. Well, that's red flag number two. And in my case, you know, my extended family, so the Young family, I'm one of five boys and my parents, thank God, are still alive. All my brothers are and their sister-in-laws. They lived all far away from us. So we lived in Idaho and Montana and they lived on the coast mostly. And Okay. Boy, those are hard conversations to have. You know, we often don't want to upset other people. But, you know, I don't know what they could have said to me in that situation, because again, for me, I got sucked in because I was trying to love my wife. But, you know, could somebody have said something 15, 20 years ago? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
So none of your brothers or your folks, while you were in this marriage, which ever said, you know, Peter, you don't seem the same, that there's something about you that's different, and what is it? Open up to us and tell us.
No, they would have known about Uncle Robert. They would have, you know, all thought, sounds a little weird. they would have mostly kept those thoughts to themselves, because Paige was a very, let's say, intimidating presence. You know, beautiful woman, long blonde hair, very attractive, 6 foot one, and well spoken, and could be, you know, quite firm. So, you know, they knew that if they were to push too much, you know, we're going to make things harder on Peter and his marriage if we ask too many questions. So then, of course, then Paige and I talked very little about Uncle Robert. So, you know, when we were away from the Young family and with, you know, Uncle Robert and the Clausens, he dominated our lives. But then when we'd go visit my family at Christmas or other times, we wouldn't say a word about him.
Is that, do you think that's typical behavior of somebody who may be in a cult, that they don't want to talk about it when they are outside of the cult?
Yes, unless they're, you know, one of these cults that's trying to constantly, you know, convert new members or get recruits. But I do think that however it looks getting into a cult, there's always the element of secrecy, right? Because what's going on inside the cult is not normal, quite often not healthy. And so, you know, you have to have the secrecy to keep the ruse, to keep the fraud, whatever it is, going.
What has the process been like for you to recover from having been in a cult for 20 years?
Well, you know, I was, again, brainwashed for, let's say, 3 years, 2.5, 3 years. And it took me about a full year to come out of it. So when Paige left me, she left me in January 2017, I still firmly believe she was right, I was wrong. She and Uncle Robert were brilliant. I was an idiot. It was all my fault. And I was desperate to keep her so that she wouldn't leave. You know, I spent about a year, I lost 30 pounds, I couldn't sleep. And during a lot of this process, for the first month or two, I would call Uncle Robert on the phone all the time. He's the only one I talked to, even though I look back now, he was the sole reason I was in that situation. So I didn't tell my family for 4 months that my wife left me and took our 3 kids. Nobody knew. So then when finally I told my family, told my friends, you know, they helped rally around me, supported me, loved me, never doubted my faith, and really started to see the Lord open my eyes and ears. And I truly believe this, to the wickedness of Uncle Robert, you know, emails and letters and things he would say that a few years prior may have been difficult to hear, but resonated. Well, now I'd be like, well, that's just crazy. But I didn't see it at the time. So then when I wrote the book, the memoir, Stop the Tall Man and Save the Tiger, you know, some people say, well, that must have been hard. And I say, it was unbelievably therapeutic and cathartic to be able to put all the puzzle pieces together. How did this happen? The dream, the tiger, and all this. In the 20 years of loving this woman, and here's how it all came crashing down. To put that in words and write it and get it out there, felt great.
How did you exit the cult? What were the circumstances that got you out?
Well, you know, very briefly, the Reader's Digest version is that Paige left me. So, and she left me because she was convinced I wasn't a Christian. Therefore, I was a fraud. I had lied to her when we got married because I said I was, but I really wasn't, which of course I now know is just utter nonsense. Booty, Uncle Robert, his real name is Robert Booty, again, acting as a gatekeeper. Everybody in that little cult, you know, at one point or another would have been convinced multiple times that you're not saved until you got saved by Uncle Robert. It's kind of like, you know, the philosophical question, if a tree falls in a forest, but no one's there to hear it, does it make a noise? Well, it's kind of like if someone is saved or becomes a Christian before they meet Uncle Robert, does it really count? And in our little cult, it didn't. So after 20 years, she felt, well, Peter's still a fraud. He's a liar. He's wicked. He's the devil. She called me all these things, told the kids I was these things, a snake, serpentine, chameleon, liar, abuser, you name it. And by the way, there was absolutely no abuse whatsoever. There was no sleep around, no fighting, no arguing. I loved this woman. But after 20, and I was completely faithful to her. But after 20 years, she left. And I was devastated. And by her leaving, I effectively got kicked out because Uncle Robert was, of course, going to back her no matter what she did. So I have nothing to do with them now. They're completely out of my lives.
So you said she left the marriage and all, but did she stay on in the cult and all, and you were the one that was expelled?
Yeah, no, that's a good word. I was. And listen, I don't have any contact with Robert Booty, haven't for about 4 years, five. And I have very little contact with Paige, unfortunately. So, but I see no change in her, you know, once the, unfortunately, you know, the lawyers got involved because she filed for divorce. We got a guardian ad litem involved because everybody saw how awful this was with the parental alienation and then the cult of Uncle Robert. So we got a guardian ad litem involved. And, you know, that guardian ad litem wrote a jaw-dropping report. The judge, you know, accepted it as the parenting plan. So the kids have lived with me, the three youngest, for 5 years now. And, you know, Paige continues to deny all of it. She denies that there was any kind of parental alienation, that there was a cult at all. So that shows me that, unfortunately, you know, she's still under his complete and utter mind control.
She is still with Uncle Robert and still with the cult, to the best of your knowledge?
Yeah, so the best of my knowledge, she is. And I would just simply say, you know, she's moved far away. She lives in Idaho. I'm in Montana. But, you know, based on, you know, what I hear from her through you know, through court proceedings, there's been no change, unfortunately. And, you know, Stuart, she's a victim just like I am, just like our kids were, because she knows no other life. And Uncle Robert has dominated her thoughts for her entire life.
And as you say, the key word is mind control.
Yeah.
That she fell into. Yeah. When she left, the marriage broke up and all, how old were your children at that time? And what were the circumstances that they had to go through during this process?
Well, the oldest would be a freshman in college at that time. And the second oldest was in high school. And then the younger three were, would have been about, you know, let's say six and up. So they were young. They were quite young. And, you know, so parental alienation is where, you know, one parent tries to alienate or badmouth the other to the kids. And, you know, the counseling community and the law considers that child abuse. And so, you know, between the guardian ad litem, my attorney, and then a family counselor that we engaged once the kids came back to live with me, all said this was the worst case of parental alienation they had ever seen in a combined 60 years of practice. So the kids truly thought I was the devil. I was an abuser, a liar, Satan, serpentine, treacherous, coward, you name it. And, you know, and what I finally discovered was that there was this direct line of poison that went from Uncle Robert into Paige, then right into the children. And the children are impressionable. They love their mom and dad. So they, at the time, they're living in Idaho with Paige and her grandparents. So they would have believed what she said. So they would say all these things about me. And, you know, now they look back and know what had happened to them. So they've been through a lot.
That was actually, you just answered what my next question was, is so how have their lives been impacted today, which is many years after this whole thing happened? Because they're all now, your youngest is now how old?
The youngest is 12. The oldest is 25. So the two oldest are out of college. They have graduated. They're young men on their own. I don't speak much with them. Things are still very tense. Unfortunately, they, you know, believe their mom and still believe that I'm the bad guy. The three youngest still do live with me. You know, I'm not perfect. I'm in need of a perfect savior. And so we have a great time together, the three of us and myself, my three kids who live with me. And they have all learned a lot and grown and matured. And they do see Uncle Robert. They do see, well, I don't see him, but they see what he stood for, what was behind all this. They see how wicked he was. They still love their mom, as they should. I do not bad mouth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, because that's the it's always the kids that suffer when there is an ongoing battle between the mother and the father. And now is part of this in your memoirs too?
Yes. So I do address it. You know, I try and keep the memoir, the focus of it is on, you know, Paige, myself, and then Uncle Robert. But clearly what happened to the children is part of the narrative. And so I do discuss it, you know, in the latter part of the book about, you know, what happened. And a lot of, you know, you look back and you say to yourself, well, was there anything criminal that went on? Like, you know, I mean, people think of cults, David Koresh and Jim Jones. Well, look how bad that turned out. Like, people die, right? Okay, there's nothing really criminal about Uncle Robert. Inappropriate, odd, wicked, yes. Criminal, no. But a lot of the bad things that he did, that let's say he would have really implanted into my head, and mostly Paige and her parents, you could see it in the kids. You could see with the way that the kids absorbed all this and then what happened to our family. And so I had to include them in the story.
And now that they are away from the cult, and every you feel that they are growing up to be more informed and better children?
Oh, absolutely. With what they know now, they're tough kids, let me tell you. They are tough. They are strong. Do they have issues like other teenage kids? Sure, of course they do. And right. It's hard being a single parent. There's no question. I can only do so much. So they have to make sacrifices as well, but they have learned a lot. And probably the most important thing I would say too is that, their faith is now really genuine to them. It's not my faith. It's not Paige's. It's not Uncle Robert's. It is their faith. It's the Christian faith. They have really come to embrace, true Christianity, realizing that they have a loving Savior and they don't need to go through a guru for anything. And so in that regard, they have become very strong.
Yeah, and most likely it'll give them the opportunity because they know the signs from both sides of the story, and to carry on their lives and also maybe to interact with other people that may be confused or, as we're saying earlier, they know some of the signs of culture are about, so that they're able to interact with their current friends in the future, to help them avoid the same pitfalls.
Well, one of the keys that I feel like my story illustrates is that, you need to have and maintain strong Christian fellowship. Now, it can be other fellowship as well. Again, going to your bowling league, seeing your friends and your relatives, but don't become isolated. And that, to me, is an obvious lesson to be learned from our situation, because for many years we would go to churches, but then the pastor would never live up to Uncle Robert or what he taught. So we kept leaving church after church after church till, a few years before Paige left me, we wouldn't go to church. We just talked to Uncle Robert on the phone. So we became very isolated. So I think the children really see that. Like the young family, we're not perfect, but we still get together, around holidays. We see each other when we can. In Paige's family, she's got three younger siblings. And because of Uncle Robert, they were shunned and ostracized back in the year 2000, and they have not really had any relationship whatsoever with their parents or Paige and all the other distant Clausen relatives, the cousins and aunts and uncles. And so our kids see that. My kids see that and know how unhealthy that is.
How has this affected Peter Young's ability to interact with older, mature women today? I mean, is your social life kind of on the back burner? Is it reserved? Is it moving forward? I mean, how has the past affected your present life?
So I was at a book club with four ladies, and they all read my book. And so we got together over coffee, and they could ask me questions. And after like an hour and a half of asking all these questions, one lady says, "So are you seeing anybody now?" So I kind of laughed. For many years, Stuart, I didn't want the marriage to end. I was still in love with my wife, but now it's been years. And so, clearly it's obviously time to move on. And there are seasons in life, right? And right now, my most important role is a dad to three kids. Does that mean I want to be single for the rest of my life? Of course not. No. Would I love to have a partner in life again? Absolutely. Right. But it's still very slow going, because I'm just busy between writing, selling real estate to pay the bills, and then being a dad to three kids. There's not a lot of free time.
Well, and the last thing you need now really is a woman that views you as somebody that's got three kids and carrying a lot of baggage. And also, I think how you're handling it is exemplary, because you know where you have come from and you have a vision of where to go. You have children that you love and they love you. And probably what I see is the best attribute is that you have learned to not allow the past to repeat itself, that you know the signs and can avoid doing that. And is that a message that you would send on to our viewers and listeners?
You know, there's a great quote that I love. I heard it after all of this happened and my life got turned upside down. And it goes something like this. I'm going to paraphrase it, but it says, hard conversations, easy life, or hard choices, easy life, easy choices, hard life. In other words, if you postpone those really difficult conversations that you know you should have, it's not going to get any easier. It's going to be harder. But if you are brave enough and have the courage to tackle and have those really uncomfortable conversations that you know you should have, well, then things will get easier. And that is, you know, a true testament to what happened to me. I did not have those hard conversations. I did not 21 years ago, 22 years ago, sit Paige down and say, honey, are you sure about this guy? Do you realize what he believes, et cetera, et cetera? Now, maybe she would have left me then. I don't know, but I love that quote because we often will postpone or ignore or just try and avoid doing what is difficult. And oftentimes the difficult things are those really hard conversations we have to have with those we love.
I think it's actually a great way to wrap up our conversation is to have hard conversations to make it an easy life. Peter, you've led an incredible life so far. And it ain't over. I mean, you're just getting into second gear now. And again, Peter Young, author PeterYoung.com is the website. Reach out, look at the website. If you're inclined to get the book, and I encourage you to do so because it's a good read. I'm about halfway through it right now. But it's a great eye-opening experience because it helps you see life in a different dimension. And all. And I use Oscar Wilde as a quote on my show. I say, be yourself because everyone else is already taken. And so it's very, very true about the life that Peter Young has led. And I thank you very, very much for sharing your story with me and with our audience.
Stuart, it's been great. I appreciate it very much.
And that'll do it for another edition of Someone You Should Know. Look forward to seeing you again next week. And again, thanks for being with us. And thanks again to Peter Young.
Someone You Should Know.